It seems like we've been talking about high sensitivity troponins forever. Most of the discussion has been theoretical. How do they work? What do they mean? How will this change admissions and additional testing? Back in late 2016, early 2017, the high sensitivity troponin was approved in the US, but in the last 6 months, we're seeing more and more EDs picking these up, including where I'm working in Jersey. Seems like the perfect time for a little review and a discussion of the logistics of incorporating high sensitivity troponin into your workflow. Let's go to the man himself, the font of all things cardiology,
Dr. Amol Mattoo.
Amol, seems like a lot of listeners have been asking about high sensitivity troponins. Do you have these in your shop where you're working?
Well, actually, Swami, we do not yet have these. I fully anticipate that we will eventually be getting them. I think that the general mindset of folks here at university is we don't want to be the first or the last for anything. So we're going to see how things play out. But I think eventually we're going to end up with them.
Yeah, I've been anticipating this for a long time, trying to read everything about them, knowing that I'm going to get them eventually. And now they are starting to be phased in my place. So let's get into this a little bit. And much of what we discuss is going to be based on two articles that you sent me. The first was in Journal of American College of Cardiology 2019 by Januzzi, and it also had Simon Mahler and Rick Bode on the author list. That was recommendations for institutions transitioning to high sensitivity troponin testing. The second article is by Baugh and his colleagues up in Boston. It's entitled Implementation of an ED High Sensitivity Troponin Chest Pain Pathway in the US. This was in Critical Pathways in Cardiology. Amol, when we look at this specific assay, troponin's troponin, but the high sensitivity piece, what makes it a high sensitivity assay?
So by definition, these highly sensitive troponins have a higher sensitivity than the conventional troponins. They're also detected a lot earlier than the current conventional troponins. Now, just going back a number of years, back when I was in residency and perhaps when you were as well, troponins were just being introduced. And every several years, there is a higher and higher and higher level of sensitivity. So I hate the term highly sensitive troponin because the fact is the conventional troponins are also pretty darn sensitive. The current troponins that we're going to talk about essentially are, I think, what most people would call fifth generation troponins that were recently approved in the United States in, I think, January 2017, approved by the FDA. They'll detect measurable cardiac troponin concentrations in at least 50% of healthy individuals. So that's how sensitive these things are. Even normal patients that are asymptomatic walking down the street, 50% of them will have detectable troponin concentrations with this new assay. And then another clinical point here, just to show you how sensitive these things are, the studies have shown that about 2% of normal patients in the general population will be found to have these highly sensitive troponins that are detectable at that 99th percentile upper reference limit. And in emergency department chest pain patients who have a lot of cardiac comorbidities, it's probably even more than 2%. So I guess as we'll get into, as sensitivity rises, the specificity falls. And again, as we get into this, because the specificity is lower, we're going to need to talk about delta troponins as well. But that essentially is how highly sensitive troponins are defined. They're so sensitive that 2% of normal patients will have levels that are above that 99th percentile limit. So there's going to be a lot of false positives that we get into.
All right, Amol, let's not get too far ahead of ourselves here. With each subsequent generation of troponin, we see different cutoff values. So what is a positive for the new highly sensitive troponin? What's a negative? And is there a maybe zone?
There's a big maybe zone. So first of all, positive is easy. Positive would be considered generally greater than 52 nanograms per liter. Now, there might be some very slight variations depending on the lab and also depending on which type of assay. Are you talking about troponin T or troponin I? Are you talking about this company or that company? But in the JACC article, they tend to use 52 nanograms per liter. So I think that's a pretty good number that we'll use in this discussion. And then negative becomes a little bit more confusing. So a negative troponin would be a troponin, or at least when can I say that the troponin is so low, we're done? Generally, what they'll say is that if the level is undetectable or less than 6 nanograms per liter, and the patient's been having chest pain for more than 3 hours, essentially you can call that done. You can call that normal. If the chest pain's been going on for less than 3 hours and the level's less than 6, then you can't quite rely on that. You're going to need to get another one. So truly negative would be chest pain's been going on for more than 3 hours and my level is less than 6, which is the lowest level of detection for these assays. Everything else becomes gray. So it's a humongous gray zone.
So any troponin value between 6 and 52 is a gray zone. And then any troponin even less than 6, if the patient's had chest pain for less than 3 hours, is also gray zone, which means we really do have to understand the numbers in these assays, because the number that it spits out on the computer is not going to be enough. And the reference range that's given there is not going to be enough for us to determine what is a negative and a positive. So since these assays are more sensitive, they're more likely to pick up low levels of troponin. And like you said, we're going to see an increase in false positives, meaning the assay says positive, but the patient doesn't actually have ACS. So what do we do with those then? I mean, how do we work this into a system that we can assess patients with?
Well, it does become very complicated, but just as a reminder to the folks out there, there's a lot of things that are going to give you what we would call false positive troponins. Now, some people will debate my use of the phrase false positive, because when the troponin is positive, it indicates, generally speaking, that there is some type of myocardial stress going on. But when I use the term false positive, what I'm saying is that there's not an acute coronary syndrome, not a ruptured plaque and thrombus formation and so on. So some of the things that can give you the elevated troponin in the absence of acute coronary syndrome are tachy and brady dysrhythmias, aortic dissection, severe CHF, sepsis, or anything that produces myocardial dysfunction, large PE, acute heart failure. Patients with chronic kidney disease can have smoldering elevated levels. So again, there's a lot of things that can cause your troponin to be elevated. So what exactly do you do when you have these elevated troponins? And that, again, that's when your serial troponins are going to become very, very important, and looking at what they refer to as the delta troponin level.
Amal, these things that cause the elevated troponin that's not ACS, that's always been there. We've always known this. We've always had to deal with this. It's just that we now have to deal with it a little bit more because we're detecting even lower levels of troponin. And so it's important for us to remember all of those other things that can cause an elevation in troponin and not just jump and say, well, everyone who has a positive troponin needs a cardiac catheterization. And I think the cardiologists are actually pretty savvy about this, but we also have to be pretty savvy. Now, let's get into the logistics of management of chest pain patients where we're worried about ACS. Let's take a patient who has chest pain. I'm thinking ACS is possible. The ECG is non-ischemic. The first high-sensitivity troponin is sent, and it's negative. Now, let's say that the patient has been having chest pain for 4 hours. Am I done in evaluating ACS at this point in this patient?
Almost. I think if we're going to follow the algorithms that have been published, and there's two very nice algorithms published in this JACC paper, one from Parkland and one that's been put together by Toby Nagurny and his colleagues at Mass General. I think it would be very prudent to follow these algorithms because they are very well researched and vetted. Essentially, what those say is that if the patient's chest pain has been going on for more than 3 hours and you get a single troponin that's less than 6, and they also incorporate the heart score. If the heart score is low, meaning 0 to 3, then you're done. So again, just a reminder that you still need to consider the EKG, non-ischemic, as you mentioned, and you still need to do a history and incorporate one of these validated risk stratification scores. In the algorithms published here in this paper, they use the heart score. If you want to use the EDAX score, or you want to use one of the other validated scores, I think that's reasonable also. The heart score is probably the most popular. And so I think that would be one way of saying, you know what, I'm done. I got one troponin and I'm done.
So heart score low risk, or one of the other clinical decision instruments, gives you a low risk patient. The ECG is non-ischemic. High sensitivity troponin is less than 6, greater than 3 hours after onset of chest pain. We're done. We can then say that this patient is ruled out for ACS, or at least is at such a low risk that we don't have to keep working them up. If the patient is at less than 3 hours, what's the recommendation then?
All right, so then it starts getting a little bit more into the gray zone. If the chest pain's been going on for less than 3 hours, then they pretty much will mandate getting a repeat troponin in 1 hour. Now, let me just digress for a moment about the 1 hour. Back in 2018, some of you may remember we had discussed ASEPs clinical policy on low-risk chest pain. And in that 2018 article, they recommended or they endorsed getting a two-hour repeat troponin with highly sensitive troponins. I think there's enough literature that we have out there now, along with these two published algorithms, to say that if you're using a highly sensitive troponin, you can, with good literature backing you up, knock that repeat troponin down to 1 hour. And I think I would support that as well. So the repeat troponin needs to be done in 1 hour. If the chest pain's less than 3 hours in duration, get a repeat troponin within the next hour after arrival. So troponin at time zero and then repeat troponin after 1 hour.
Amal, in that group of low-risk patients where they come in less than 3 hours, does it matter if that second troponin is still within 3 hours of onset? So let's say the patient comes in 30 minutes after their chest pain starts. Initial troponin is 4 nanograms. Your repeat troponin at an hour is still 4 nanograms. Is that enough, even though we're only an hour and a half from onset of chest pain?
Yeah, that's a great question. And it's really not specifically addressed in the paper. I think that there's enough literature backing up the sensitivity of this highly sensitive troponin that even if the onset of pain was within the past hour or 2 hours, so go ahead and get the repeat troponin at 1 hour, and you still will be very justified by following the literature and the published algorithms.
Let's flip the scenario a little bit. Let's say that, again, I have a patient that I have a suspicion for ACS. The ECG is non-ischemic, and my first troponin is in the positive range. So the first troponin is 60 nanograms. Is my workup done? I can just call cardiology, admit the patient, and call it a day?
Yes, that's a very convenient scenario because it does become very easy when the troponin is clearly positive. That's not even in the gray zone. So you hate to wish for bad things to happen, but you almost wish that your troponin will be really high or really, really low. And you can go ahead and call cardiology. And that essentially defines a rule-in scenario.
All right, Amal, then I got to put your feet to the fire on that gray zone. So now I've got the same patient. I've got a concern for ACS. The ECG is non-ischemic. And the first troponin, which is taken 4 hours after onset of chest pain, comes back at 40 nanograms per milliliter, right smack dab in that gray zone. What's my next steps here?
So the next thing that you need to do is go ahead and that's pretty much all you need to do.
Hey, Amal, where do you want me to put this stack of crumpled papers? Just in the back here? All right.
So, Amal, I'm sorry, but that man who tends to stand next to you while we're recording a lot, he was wrinkling his paper again. So if you could tell him to stop, and then we'll repeat what you just said.
Oh, boy.
All right, I'm out of here. I'll see you later. Okay.
All right. Well, I tried to get out of answering that question, obviously, but you didn't fall for it. So, unfortunately, it does become very complicated. And it's complicated in that I had mentioned that a repeat troponin can be done within 1 hour. When you look at the actual algorithms, if the repeat troponin has gone up by a certain amount, then you could be done. If the repeat troponin at 1 hour has gone up by more than that, you need to get a 3 hour repeat troponin. And then you add the heart score based on whether it's the low or intermediate heart score versus the high heart. It's very complicated to try to explain in audio. It is actually fairly sensible when you actually look at the algorithm and read through the paper that was, again, an excellent paper published by Christopher Baugh and Toby Nagurny, which explains the rationale behind how they came up with this algorithm and also why this algorithm was added to the JACC paper. And I think it's probably best it, rather than trying to describe it in audio and confusing a lot of people, if we just refer people to the algorithm.
We'll drop that algorithm in the show notes so people can pull it up. And I think that if your hospital is switching over to these and you want to put a protocol together, these articles are a great place to start. These flow diagrams are a great place to start. And when it's 2 a.m, this is exactly what you want. You want a flow diagram that tells you, here's your patient, here's the risk that you've assessed, here's your first troponin, what do I do now? What's the next step? So I think we need those flow diagrams. So we're going to put all that in the show notes for people to look at. There's two other points that Amal wanted to make really clear with these new algorithms. One is that in the patient with a heart score of 4 to 6, the new algorithms allow us for a quicker rule out of those patients, a safe rule out, and then sent home. In the old heart pathway, if you're in that 4 to 6 range, you pretty much were buying yourselves an OBS admission. The second thing is that Amal wanted to make sure that we really stress how powerful these protocols and pathways are that are laid out in that JACC article. This is something that we can grab and bring right into our clinical care, and they are already well vetted, they're well researched, they're well validated, and so we can use these instead of trying to vent our own protocols. Now, Amal, one other issue that comes up anytime we talk about troponins is the chronically low elevations of troponin that we see in patients with CHF and CKD. And you mentioned this earlier, that patients who have these other comorbid conditions are going to have positive high sensitivity troponins and probably going to have a more common positivity of that high sensitivity troponin than we've seen in the past. Now, we know, and we've talked about before, that when you see these slightly elevated troponins and the patient doesn't have a really great story for ACS, we're usually going to do serial troponins on them. Is it the same recommendation here if they have a high sensitivity troponin that is quote-unquote in the positive range, let's say that it's 16 nanograms on that first troponin, but they have not such a great story for that chest pain? Are you getting a repeat to see if they're trending up or trending down? Or again, is one troponin enough to say, we're done?
We're absolutely going to recommend repeating that troponin. And you're going to be looking for the same type of repeat troponin elevations as you would with the other patients. And again, it does become very difficult because these patients have chronically elevated smoldering levels of troponins. It's helpful if you can pull up old labs and see what their baseline troponin is. But if you're not positive that they're at simply at their baseline troponin, get the repeat troponin in an hour and look for any rising levels.
And all this, of course, is in the setting of chest pain. That's not a great story. If they have a great story for chest pain, if you're really concerned about them, then you're probably not going to wait for that repeat troponin before you're talking to cardiology and saying, I've got a high-risk patient with a positive troponin. Their EKG might be a little bit different than their baseline. Their story's pretty good. But it's more in the patient that has more vague symptoms, just like we had in the past with these patients where our troponins were slightly positive, and then we were getting the repeats done.
Exactly.
All right, Alma, with the upcoming changeover to the high-sensitivity troponin in many, if not all, places, is there any role for us keeping the conventional assay around, or can we just dump that one?
Well, I think once you've adopted the highly sensitive troponin, I don't really see a good reason to keep the conventional troponin around. I think it would probably just add some diagnostic confusion. And just the way we got rid of myoglobin when we adopted CKMB, and we got rid of CKMB when we adopted the earlier generations of troponins, I think it would be totally reasonable to abandon the current troponins in favor of the highly sensitive troponins once your lab adopts those.
I'm sure that we're going to get more and more questions about this topic, Amal, as more places are incorporating this into their hospitals. And again, we will put in the show notes the articles that Amal referred to. But if you have questions about how these things work, how to incorporate them into your workflow, what to do with these middling levels, send them on over and we'll address them on a future segment. Amal, thanks for clearing a lot of this up for us.